on, keep on, keep striving for this religion that we preach. Keep on, keep on, keep pushing, for nothing's ever right or free.
And welcome to another edition of the Luton Town International Podcast. I'm joined eventually by Alex, since he sorted out his IT issues, and Gav, whose fault it would have been anyway, because let's face it, that's where it goes. How are you both?
Yep. Good.
Yeah, good, good. Gav, you're squinting a lot.
Yeah, I know. I don't have my glasses on. It's hurting my eyes. I think it's the allergies.
Excuses. He moves there.
As you can probably tell from my voice, I'm not doing too good this week.
Oh, what do you want? Violin or something. Here's the world's smallest violin that's playing just for fucking you.
Please, that'd be great. Thanks.
I think Alex is there. He's just a bit frozen, I think, at the moment. So it's he's been having issues. So we're just going to go over the still of Alex until he starts moving again and go from there.
Yeah. At least we have the background.
Can you hear me? I can hear you, Alex. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we can hear you. You're just cutting in and out. You're good.
So, yeah, just cut in where you need, because I can't see if you can see it or not. So, anyway, three games to talk about. One, I'd like to talk about the first half, not so much the second half. I think you can get that one. And the other two, the 90th minute onwards, were absolutely great. So, we can start chronologically, just run through them quickly. Palace game. Gav, it was not the best game. It was a game where probably our players need to learn how to fucking back pass, because it's we gave away a goal from one, we almost gave away a goal from another, they almost got lobbed, and then up against it, had a spell, we're getting back into it slightly, and then Cordy Woodrow pops up 96 minutes with a goal from absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think we all love Cordy Woodrow, right? He's just an absolutely fantastic player. Yeah, it's. I think we said in the last podcast, Nick, going into this, that we probably needed 5, 6, 7 points from these three games. It didn't happen, but the Palace one was the one I was not as disappointed in getting the point, because with a new manager, there's always a chance of a new manager bounce and everything with Palace. And, you know, so that they had that playing for them. But, yeah, back passing and just in general, our play wasn't fantastic, but we snatched something from it. Keeps us in with a chance of survival. So that at the end of the day, that's the main thing.
And of course, considering the circumstances, another two central defenders going off injured, that's not great. One of them is fit enough to carry on. Hashioki, I thought when he came on, he did quite well against Palace. I thought, you know, he can actually fit in here. We'll get onto that. It's Yeah, Alex, just speaking whenever, because we can't see if you can hear us or not. But
Well, I thought the Palace game was pretty okay.
And there he's cut out again. So we'll keep trying. So Gav's going to have a great job trying to edit this. He's going to really enjoy that.
Editing? What's editing? I just put the fucking thing up.
Exactly. I did get told actually someone likes our podcast because it's kind of, he likes the, they like the roughness around the edges of it, which I think we're just going absolutely full throttle over here.
God bless Ollie.
Hello, Ollie. Right. Anyway, so got the Palace game, but I mean, it was worth it in the grounds for those absolute scenes. There were some people I think that actually left before the end of the game. Never, ever, ever do that with us.
No. And as we proved against Brighton, it's probably best that you get there in time too.
Well, there is that, but it's sort of, we definitely have goals in it. I mean, we'll come on to that one, but it was the, it seems a pandemonium there, and you're thinking, okay, that's a point you almost didn't expect. Then we got to Bournemouth, the game, you'd have taken a point before, sort of pre-hand, you're thinking, okay, point or nothing. But then to go 3-0 up, I would say 3-0, some great counter-attacking. Bournemouth did look dangerous even that first half.
Yeah, I mean, they did. They looked good going forward. But as you said, we were able to catch them on the counter enough times that I think... The first half, I mean, I told you guys beforehand because I worked, no spoilers. And honestly, I wish someone had of, because after that first half, I was just like, I was sitting in my living room singing, "We're fucking staying up. We're staying."
Well, you did say no spoilers, and since we had stuff saying that, I thought it was absolutely unfair that you get to see it as well.
Yeah, and I was sitting there and I was singing, you know, that we're staying up, and the second half started. And I'll be honest with you, as soon as Bournemouth scored the first, I just went, "Oh no." And I just kind of knew something bad's about to happen. You know, where you just get that feeling in the pit of your stomach?
They have momentum. You think you just hold out. But the thing is, it's 3 goals in 20 minutes. And it's, sort of Hashioka, I think he didn't have the best game. He's had some decent games to come in. He's adjusting to it. Bournemouth are actually very, very good attacking as well. I think that's proved that. So you've got Solanke, the England international. You've got the winger. And the second one, obviously, gets crosses the line slightly, gets given. And third, there's a sense of inevitability and thinking, like, how can you hold on, especially a reshuffle back line? And I think that's where the injury is, and sort of, you know, the two games there. I think that really does come back into sort of, you know, bites a bit, because it's, especially against teams that sort of, you know, can rotate a bit more. We can't rotate. That's the problem we've got.
Yeah, and I mean, the first half, like, you speak about Hashioka. I actually thought in the first half against Bournemouth, Hashioka was actually okay. I actually thought the defence in general was okay. But the Bournemouth manager changed things at halftime, and it stopped being the case of getting the ball out wide and getting it into the box in the air, because we were dealing with that fine. You know, it was get the ball into Solanke's feet. That's when it started causing us problems, and that's when everything just started falling apart in the second half, is when they start going to feet a little bit more. Now, I know their second goal came from across into the box, but they were definitely, it was more of a game plan to play it into feet and try turn the defenders and try use your pace against the defenders rather than let's get the ball out wide, get it into the box and see if we can win the aerial duels, which would seem to be the case in the first half for Bournemouth. But I mean, here's the thing. You can like Bournemouth, fair play to them. They adjusted, they changed, they got what they needed out of the game. But if you're Luton Town, and I know we have a ton of injuries, there's got to be a certain point where you just go, shut up shop. Two banks of five. Stop their flow into the game. Two banks of five. Let's just stop this madness for 10, 15 minutes and see where we're at. But we didn't. And it honestly, the second half I was watching it, and it just brought me flashbacks to a Stick to Football episode with Roy Keane, where he was talking about the City game and everyone talking about how brave Luton were to just keep going for it against City when we lost 6-2 in the FA Cup. And he's like, it's not brave, it's stupidity, it's naivety. And that's what it was. Like, we against Bournemouth in the second half, we just kept trying to go. And it showed the naivety.
I mean, I think this get overshadowed by the fact we scored, we conceded 4 goals and blew a 3-goal lead. But we had sort of, you know, we did have the ball the fourth time, marginally offside from Chong, who's obviously come in, done quite well. And then we had another one, so, you know, free kick comes in. It's headed down by Morris. Ross Barkley is not expecting
somehow it. Missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we did have chances to win the second half, but as soon as they score the first one, it's like, lads, the next 10, 15 minutes, just don't give anything away. Like, it's naivety on the player's part, but it's also a naivety, and it's a learning curve for Edwards, who I think was extremely pissed off after the game. If looking at his interviews and reading his comments was anything to go by, he seemed really, really annoyed at the fact. And he's not that he seemed annoyed at the players, but he seemed annoyed at himself as well.
Oh, he put his hands so up, he goes, "That's down to me." So whether he's protecting the players or not, I don't know.
That's gotta be a learning curve for him. You know, like if we go 2-3-0 up in a game from here to the end of the season, I'd be highly surprised if we lose it.
Yeah. Well. Two can be obviously quite dangerous, but it happened. I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's, I said, you'd expect a point probably maximum beforehand, so we weren't that much worse off in hindsight, but it hurt.
It the thing is though, Nick, it really shouldn't happen. If you're 3-0 up in a game, you should get something out of that game. Like, I get it, we scored 3 goals in the first half, so they just went one better in the second half. It's still 45 minutes play. I get all that, but if you're 3-0 up in a game, you should not. If your team comes back and plays spectacularly and scores a last minute goal and gets a 3-3, you're still kind of upset and irritated about it, but in no way, shape, or form should you leave that ground with no points whatsoever.
No, I mean, it's the archetypal game of two halves to a large extent, but it's so it's been. And then the Forest game, which I said before, I thought, no, ideally win, because obviously we would have gone above them if we won against Bournemouth. Thought if we beat them, we go above them. If they beat us, they go 6 points clear of us. I think that is then some massive gun units. So I thought, right, it's a really, really want to win, but whatever you do, do not lose. Again, Alex is not here to praise his favourite player, Chris Woods, as we all know how much Alex likes Chris Woods. I mean, on that one, I think it's some quite quick play, but I think he gets away from his markers too quickly, too easily as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great ball, and it's a cool finish, and it's at the end, it's what you call a striker's finish, right?
Yeah.
Like Morgan Gibbs White, I think it is, who crosses the ball, knows exactly where he's going to be, knows exactly where he's going without even looking. And for Woods, it's a natural striker's instinct to just get between the two defenders, you know, hope the ball beats the first defender and then you're in, you know. And Alex, at the start of the season, said he was the most overrated player ever. He's now scored 3 goals against us. So thanks for that, Alex. But what you were saying before the game was very much, you know, must win to a certain extent, but definitely do not lose. Cannot lose. And if I'm being totally honest, I think we were lucky to come away with a point, considering some of the chances that Forrest had with two clearances off the line, I think it was, from Mengi and Burke.
But I mean, again, there could be different games. If those go in, it might change the dynamics. You don't know, but it was... they were some good clearances. We had a chances. Ross Barkley could have had a couple, so, you know, early on in the game, because we took the game for the first 10 minutes and they settled into it. What I am going to say, obviously, I don't like to criticise referees, and if everyone knows me, that's a blatant lie. But the referee, it was absolutely, Darren England, I think it was, he was absolutely shocking. I mean, there was, you know, the tackle's basically sort of, more to make a challenge, have a free kick given against him. Has exactly the same thing done to him, and it's absolute play on, no issues at all. Inconsistently, Ross Barkley makes a brilliant sliding tackle, clearly gets the ball, and the referee somehow gives it a free kick.
And here's the thing, like, we're obviously going to see it from a Luton Town point of view, but I've seen a lot of Nottingham Forest fans as well on social media complaining about the referee. I think he was bad both ways. And one of the things that you just pointed out there was consistency. Wasn't consistent at all. Like, you, as you said, Morris would get fouled and nothing given. Morris would do the exact same thing back, and it's a free kick. Like, there's no consistency. And honestly, like, when I heard the name, I was kind of like, I know him from somewhere. Like, if you know a referee's name, it's bad. Generally, yeah. It tends to be bad. And it's kind of like, I know him, how do I know him? And then you Google it, and it's like, oh, great, yeah, he was the VAR guy for the Liverpool-Tottenham debacle at the beginning of the season. This guy's, yeah, fucking great, nice one. You know, and again, he proved, like, I don't know how he's got to this level of officiating. No idea whatsoever. He shouldn't be here. He shouldn't be at that level. Nothing, absolutely nothing. He was bad on both ends. Probably more decisions went against us than they did against Forrest. But yeah, he's a really piss poor referee. And if he's one of the top 10 referees in England that he's getting Premier League games, then it's a damning indictment of refereeing in England.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there's a you've got a couple of different things. It's I mean, in the Championship, I always think when you say Premier League referee, you think, oh God, here we go. Here's a Premier League referee. They're over-reliant on VAR, and also they think everyone's there to see them, which they're not. So I thought, okay, that might be an adjustment thing, but they're just as bad when you get up to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Well, you say the damning indictment of refereeing in England, but the really odd thing is, when you get to the tournaments, the English referees are normally the better ones, which, given how shit they are, you're thinking, what's that say about the referee standing refereeing the rest of the world?
I think I spoke about it on the last podcast about the referee in Spain during the Real Madrid-Valencia game. It's bad all over the world. I don't understand how it's so bad. I really don't. Like, you're talking about the most successful sport in the world, the sport that's played by more people in the world than any other sport, and these are the officials that we're getting for it. It's baffling to me, absolutely baffling. But here's the thing, as I said, like, I've seen Forest fans complain about them on social media as well, and, you know, it definitely did go both ways. Now, there was a couple of things, like, the Mengi goal, like, I get the fact that I can't hit your hand before it goes into the net, but Mengi's hands are down by the side. Where do you want his hand to be?
I think with
are you looking for the cut off his hand?
Well, that's the other thing with the rules there. It's basically, if the defender handles the ball, if it's accidental, it's not a penalty. If it's their hands in a natural position. But when it's a striker, it's different. It's basically, it can't hit the striker's hand at all. Some people said we actually kind of hit above his elbow. I don't know what the rules are anymore on that. I don't know anybody does. So I think there's probably enough. I mean, to me, I thought, saw the replay, I thought, yeah, that will get disallowed. Some people are disagreeing on it. It's a 50-51, isn't it? That's VAR decision on it.
But it's the point that you just brought up right there, right? So if the ball comes in and Mengi heads it and it hits a Forest player in the arm, but his arm is in a natural position, penalty's not given.
Yeah.
But, like, you're still... That's stopping a goal-scoring opportunity. So you've got to... I've said it for the longest time. I think one of the main problems in the game is the rules are not black and white. There's a ton of fucking gray area that people can get caught up in, that referees can get caught up in, and it doesn't simplify the game for them in any way, shape, or form. It needs to be black and white. It needs to be, this is a penalty, this isn't a penalty, this is a free kick, this isn't a free kick. Just go with that. Like, if you're leaving something up to interpretation, you're always going to have problems.
And I think you've got, I mean, obviously you'd be upset if Serena get a penalty given against you for an accidental handball, but we actually had a cup in the opening game this season. I think we said neither was a penalty was that one. It's just not got any better since then. Decisions. Yeah. However, again, we showed the fact we can actually still score. So 17 goals in a row at the moment, which is the highest in the Premier League. Obviously, we're not going to talk too much about the defensive aspect. But again, last minute came in. Luke Berry, on as a substitute, so, you know, scored for the same club in all four divisions. That is got to be some kind of record.
Yeah, absolutely delighted for Beza. It's one of them things where, you know, we've seen players come and go within that four-year span that you kind of look and go, ooh, you know, that hurt, or, you know, I wish they didn't move on or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's because these players move on because they're not willing to play the role that is needed by the club for them. Berry has been willing to play whatever role the club needs. He's been willing to do it. I mean, how many games did he start last season? I don't think he started any games this season. He knows he's not the first name on the team sheet, but he also knows that he can make an impact when he comes on, and that's what he's there to do. You know, he's a very, what did Nathan Jones used to call him? Game changers?
He's a
game changer. You know, he's there to change the game when he comes on. And yeah, I know, like, we've talked about it. Some of the players at the end of the season, if their contracts are expired or whatever, probably need to be moved on. And Berry, because he's so well-liked and because he's played that role, I would love to see him go somewhere where he can finish out his career playing football on a regular basis. But, I mean, just absolutely delighted for him to be able to come off the bench and score a goal in the Premier League, something that he'll never, ever forget.
Yeah, and I think he's deserved a season in the Premier League, yeah. I think, just being part of the journey. Now, obviously, as a player who'd been there even longer, Paddy Ruddock. I thought Paddy was fantastic in the game until he got sort of, you know, thrown into the advertising hoardings.
And again, abused? That is what, assaulted?
Pretty much.
Until he got assaulted?
Yeah. And again, I thought he was having a great game there. And I think he's a player, I think, when he scores in the Premier League, that's going to be the favourite goal of the season.
I just hope it's at Kenilworth Road because that place will erupt. You know, I hope it's not away from home. I hope it's at home because Kenny should rightfully just erupt as soon as Pelly puts that ball in the back of the net. He played really, really well against Forest. He brought energy, which we all know Pelly does every day. He's still not the answer to our defensive midfielder problem. I think that's pretty much evident. But he definitely brings legs to a midfield that I don't necessarily think Clark or Barkley have. So there's definitely, again, like Berry, there's definitely a place for him, you know, within the squad. And because of the amount of injuries that we've had, like, I was shocked because for some reason the American TV over here that was showing the game had him playing center half. I'm like, fuck no.
I'm thinking, yeah, that's not happening. So
yeah, and then as soon as the game started, you see, okay, he's not playing center defense. Thank God for that. But yeah, he He did really well against Forest. Again, as I said, not the answer to our defensive midfielder problems, but gives us the answer
to defensive midfielder problems are both in the treatment room.
And so we need an answer. Pretty much. The solutions to our problem are in the treatment room, but we still need an answer somehow, because it's like you just have to look at the first 10-15 minutes of the first game, how influential Barkley was within the final third of that pitch. Like, three shots in the first 15 minutes, I think he had?
Yeah.
Two on target. Like, that's where you need him.
I think he has fantastic... I know you've been banging the string, but I think coming from deep, which I think is the role we've been playing there, he can obviously pick up a ball, and he's not afraid to run at people and sort of take it on and create from deep as well. So it's not a case of sticking the final thirds and also the striker.
But you're asking him to pick up the ball at the edge of his own box and create something in the final third. Like, I just don't think that's... Like, he has the passing ability to do it, and he can take on players, yes. But as I just mentioned a minute ago, he hasn't got the legs that the likes of Apelli has. You know, he hasn't got that. Now, he can move when he wants to. Not when he's defending, but he can move when he wants to. But I just think you need to get him higher up the pitch.
I think if you get him higher up the pitch, then I think...
It creates more. It puts the other team on the back foot. You know, I'm not like, I mean, the back foot inside their own half. I'm not talking about, oh, well, he has the ball on the edge of Luton's own box, so that's fine. And you know, when he starts moving up, we'll press him. We need to get him into the final third where he can create stuff and actually cause defenses problems.
Yeah, but you need to get it to him first. If he's not there to actually take out some of these world class midfielders to actually do it, you can't get there. Yeah,
and that's why we miss Lekonga and Nakamba.
That's why you need to, you know, keep him deep or something there, and then so, you know, break forward when we can. Break as a team, defend as a team, not just right go up there and be a second auxiliary striker. Obviously,
but it's the thing. I think against Bournemouth, I think one of the goals, like, he was at fault for it. You know, that ball gets played in far too easily. Like, no outstretched boot, no trying to get tight to the striker, to the forward. You know, just nothing. You know, and That's what he lacks in his game, you know. Like, he's fantastic on the ball, and I've preached this all season. Like, I'm not a Barkley hater. I really, really am. And like, I want him on the ball as much as possible, creating for Luton Town players, because he has that ability in him. But he doesn't seem to have that defensive nous about him, and that's obvious when Lekonga and Nakamba aren't in the team.
Yeah, I think you're being a bit too critical on that one. So, yes, he'll give the ball away because he's been given a license. So he'll give the ball away sometimes. But when he gives the ball away, it's not like he's kind of there ambling, so just looking to get back. He gives away, can't always catch up with it. But it's...
There's been a couple of times this season he's been jogging. And I think I pointed out on the podcast, like, he's been jogging back rather than trying to bust a gut to get back after... Us, not necessarily him losing the ball in midfield, but just us in general losing the ball in midfield. I think Chelsea was one of the Palmer goals. But again, I'm not a Barkley basher. We need him on the ball. We need him creating. You know, if Doughty's out injured for any long period of time, which I'm hoping is not the case, because he came off at half time against Forest, Barkley becomes even more important for us.
Yes, the only crazy one we've got from that. Well, it's Clark, I suppose, as well.
The only one that can put a decent fucking cross into the box. Although Kabore did decent against Bournemouth.
But, I mean, Kabore obviously was sort of, you know, moved to centre-back because we didn't have a choice. And I thought he did okay there. I was a bit nervous about that because Kabore, I think he's good going forward. He can't defend to save his life.
He did well against Forest. He did. I think he got booked, and I can't understand why he got booked, because I thought the tackle he put in was perfect. There was nothing wrong with that. And again, that comes back. We were already talked about the referee being absolutely fucking dog shit.
I think he got booked for wearing orange.
For wearing orange. let's stick with that.
Yeah. Right. Final whistle anyway. It's sort of, you know, it's the point that it's important not to lose there. And you can hear it loud and proud from this sort of loud and proud from the crowd. Point deductions, it's coming for you. And then sure enough, next day...
My point of view on the point deduction for Forest is that why did they only get four? I'm hearing and reading, go on, I'll let you, because you probably seen more of this
I think it's been explained by the commission. They said it's basically they had a look at the Everton stuff and they said, okay, So it's 3 points for initial offence, then 3 points for severity of the offence, as in how much basically they've overspent. Plus that, but then they've knocked off two basically in mitigation, which I thought it could have been their player they sold so we couldn't send the transfer window. But no, it's a mitigation because they've cooperated, which would have been nice if someone treats us like that. So, you know, we've got the minus 30. Because they cooperated and missed their offence and didn't cause an issue, they gave them 2 points back. Now Forrest is talking about appealing. But I think someone's mentioned if they appeal, potentially it could be deemed frivolous and have the points increase. I don't see that happening. But it does kind of make a bit of a mockery of it because you think you're right. So if 6 points is basically, the Everton Commission said 6 points is kind of the starting point. I mean, Everton, I think they got the 3 points initial offence and the 3 points because they didn't come clean with it and tried to delay it a bit. So it's kind of excuse on that one. But it is a case of make up the rules as you go along, isn't it?
I like the one thing that like I just could not get over is, oh, we're going to give you 2 points back because you cooperated. I'd fucking expect them to cooperate. Like, if they're getting this because they cooperate, City are fucked. They're going to get points added on for not cooperating. But
City are going to get points of, you know, taken off their deduction. So basically, as their total, because they're City and they've got really big, expensive lawyers.
Really, I mean, really expensive lawyers.
Just give City some, you know, 70-point head start for next season by the time their lawyers are finished.
But I just, like, I didn't get the... It's broken down like 3 and 3 and then minus the 2 for cooperation. Cooperation just doesn't, it just baffles me completely. But I agree with you. I like if Forest appeal it, like points getting added on it, I don't see that happen. And I don't see how they can do that.
If I'm Forest, I don't think
I'm appealing it. I look at that and I know, like, I read their comments where they're, oh, we were treated unjust and everything. If I'm Forrest, I'm rubbing my hands together going, fucking great. They only took 4 points because it could have been a lot worse considering that from everything I've read, they're what they breached the numbers by was actually more than what Everton breached their numbers by. And they got 4 points?
I think with Forrest's case, though, it's Forrest had a different target for numbers to breach.
Yeah.
Yes, they still breached it.
Because they just come up from...
Yeah, how they come up and then spent 250 million quid on players,
yeah,
on about 70 different players. So it's not like they've been sort of, you know, being careful with the way they've done things. So,
yeah, no, I mean, here's the thing, no one gave like people are always gonna like you're gonna get on social media now. Oh, if Luton stay up because of points deduction, do you really feel like you deserve to stay up? Yeah, I do. Because we did it within the means and within the rules of the game, and no one gave a fuck about us when we got a points deduction. So why should we give a fuck about anyone else when you get point deductions? Bournemouth didn't care that we got a 30-point deduction. They got point deductions that season too. But guess what? They stayed up because of our point deduction.
Yeah.
Bournemouth didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, I think actually the fact you were looking at this, so rather than, well, do you think it's fair to lose that because of points deduction? I think the phrase you're looking for is, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, no one gave, like, the thing is, like, people, they're talking now about an independent regulator and all this stuff. And, like, I don't know how it's going to work. So I can't speak in it. But, like, the little bits that I've seen is, like, oh, it's going to hinder teams in the Premier League from, you know, challenging the big six and the ones that wanted to go into the Super League. I'm like, and someone turn around and go, it won't stop clubs from going. Clubs won't go out of existence. Something along the lines of clubs won't go out of existence. Someone tell that to Reading right now who are fighting for their lives. Someone tell that to Bury. Someone tell that to any Luton fan who realistically thought our club was gone. That clubs won't go out of existence. You're fucking ignorant to the game if you think that. Clubs in the Premier League might not go out of existence. But if you, the football isn't just the Premier League. Football is the whole pyramid scheme in England.
I think especially pretty in person. Anyone listening to this is going to agree with sort of the first time
everyone's actually fucking, yeah. It's just fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, clubs won't go bust. Yes, they will. It just won't be a Premier League club. It won't be a club that you care about. It'll be a club in League One or League Two or a team that overspent trying to get out of the National League that ends up having to go all the way back to the end of the fucking pyramid. You know, create a new Phoenix club or whatever they're called. They're the ones that are going to go
bust. Just that sort of saying about this, sort of, That does actually dovetail nicely into a point I wasn't going to make, but there was there were 10 clubs, I think, who voted against sharing Premier League money with the further down the pyramid. We weren't one of them, but I think Forest were one of them, strangely. Mm-hmm. But...
Yeah, I've seen that 10 clubs, and honestly, like, it didn't surprise me. I think there was one or two that surprised me. I think Forest were one of the ones that surprised me, because I honestly think, like, you're in a relegation battle. You could be in the championship next season. You should want money flowing down the systems, you know. And I can't remember who. There was another club that I was really surprised by as well. It was a club that is down there as well. Is in that relegation battle. And I just couldn't.
Or Palace or something like that. But
I think I might have been Bournemouth, because you know what I thought when I seen it. I just thought to myself, oh yeah, that's Foley. That's Bill Foley, who bought into Bournemouth, and he owns I think he still owns a hockey team over here, the Vegas Golden Knights, and he's just throwing money at that as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was Bournemouth. I can't remember exactly, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was Bournemouth, because that's the sort of person that Bill Foley is
as well. So it's may have a look.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Bill Foley, because his answer to everything is just throw more money at it, you know? And the more money he can get from it, the better.
Yeah, which again is a kind of fairly sort of short-term view coming through, because it's the Premier League is a kind of... Premier League is obviously tough to go through. Let's have a look.
Yeah, it is. It's an extremely difficult league to get into. Once you get there, you know, it's difficult to stay in, because...
The two teams mentioned, both of them. So the teams who voted against it were Arsenal, American owned, I think. Yeah. Chelsea, American owned. Tottenham, God knows who they're owned by, but it's going to be.
I think there's an American interest in that in there somewhere.
Yeah, they were joined by Liverpool. Well,
American owned.
Yeah.
Does the team starting to form here?
Yeah. West Ham.
I don't know about them. I don't know who owns West Ham.
Villa.
I want to say there's some sort of group there. I don't know if they're Wolves. American though. Wolves?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Nottingham Forest, Palace, and Bournemouth.
Yeah, see the four that surprised me there are Wolves, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth, and Palace. They're the ones that surprise me. Because you think about it as well. You think of where those four clubs came from. Mm-hmm. And Bournemouth have been in, this is their second season in a row in the Premier League, I think, right?
I think so, yeah.
Wolves have been here for a little bit now. Forest, this is their second season. And then Palace have been here for a little bit now. But each one of them teams, like, I'm sure they have new owners since last, like, or ownerships brought in to get into the Premier League. But don't forget where you came from. You're like, you just have to look at a team like Bolton, you know, who were in the Premier League for years and then slipped down, and all of a sudden everything just went fucking pear-shaped. And now
ultimate shareholders, the chairman of the Fosun Group, Duo Tran Chang, Wang Quinbin, and Liang Xinyan.
Yeah, so they're not American. Thank God for that.
They're not English, are they?
They're not English, but... And here's the thing, like... Palace again surprises you, because isn't the main person there Steve Parrish?
Let's have a look. This is how we do our research in this program. Just
right, we do it. We do it as it's going on. But I want to say, I think Parrish might be the face of it, but I think, like, there's obviously probably income coming in from outside of that. But again, like, I bring it back to the point, like Bolton. Oh. I think they went all the way down to League Two, didn't they? Or league, well, I know they're in League One now, but
right. So, Palace Texas Group, sounds American, bought the club in February 20. Despite his background in virtual reality and visual effects, he's founded a human technology company, FaceBank, and invested in the streaming service Fubo TV. He also owns a football club in Belgium, so it's part of a franchise.
Well, that makes up my mind. I'm not getting Fubo TV anymore. I'm not putting money into Palace. I want them going fucking down. But even like you think about it, and like. Everyone has some sort of American interest. Like, we're not going to sit here and say we're different, because we're not. There is an American businessman that is a shareholder in Luton Town, but he grew up. The whole reason he's a shareholder in the club is because I don't know if he grew up there or he went to college in in England, but basically he fell in love with the game while he was there, and he fell in love with the club, and that's why he's a shareholder, and he's based out of, I think, San Jose or somewhere like that. But like, there's a difference between one person being a shareholder and a whole group owning a club. And these clubs shouldn't forget where they came from, especially the likes of Palace and Wolves, because you could be the next Bolton. And fair play, Bolton are doing pretty decent this season in League One, but you could be the next Bolton.
But I think, I mean, I'm going to differentiate here. I'm going to be slightly fair to the fans of those clubs. The fans of those clubs are longer-term ones, they'd probably disagree with voting against it. I think it's only sort of, you know, it's the newer ones and the basic stuff, you know, the fact that got to hold out. These are not football men. These are sort of, you know, money men trying to sort of put through onto it.
But I think, so to flip that, I do agree. Like, the fans of the club don't necessarily always have a choice in the ownership of the club, you know, but you can definitely make your voice known that you're not a fan of this person. Like, you look at Ashley at Newcastle, and the Newcastle fans were constantly on his back. You look at the United fans with Glazers now, and you know, the protests are still going on. The one thing I don't like is when fans come out about the ownerships, but then all of a sudden you start doing decently and all of a sudden you hear nothing about the ownerships, i.e. Arsenal. Remember a couple of years ago, they wanted the Kroenkes out. They wanted the Kroenkes gone. Now everything's apparently perfect in Arsenalville, you know. You've got to take the good with the bad, you know, and you can't just get on their backs when it's bad. Like, you've got to look at the whole thing and go, are these owners right for us or not?
Well, I think it's sort of gone the other way, is it? People say, aren't these owners right for this? Like, Newcastle get taken over by Saudi Arabia, who's obviously, they don't have the best human rights record in the world. I'm going to put that slight polite because this isn't the Luton Town political podcast. But you know where I'm coming from. So it's, but they then see the billions that could be invested. They're thinking, yeah, that's fine. We'll have a bit of that. Obviously, it's not doing them any good whatsoever at the moment, but it is still almost anything, right? So you've actually somehow got worse owners than Mike Ashley.
And this is the thing, like, it's the same with the United thing, right? Is that, you know, the Qatar bid came in and everyone's going like, oh, you don't want Qatar owning your club. But the opposite to that is leaving the Glazers in charge. Like, you got to weigh up which one's fucking worse. And like, Newcastle, you know, okay, keep Ashley or bring the Saudis in, you know? And Newcastle are one of the clubs that have been stopped by PSR and financial fair play, and that, you know, they can only still spend a certain amount, so they can't really challenge the big teams, you know, the big six as such. But I mean,
well, you said, just going back to that Man United example, I know you love some talking about Man United, but you said,
yeah,
right,
let's go. Let me take this off and I'll show you my United shirt.
Fuck me. But yeah, you've got sort of, you say, okay, which would be worse, of, you know, being owned by Qatar or the Glazers? And there's sort of, there's some fans seem to like the fact of being taken by Qatar. Qatar, who's got, well, you saw the World Cup, absolutely airbrushed human rights record, everything else. It's nation state owned, and that's selling a soul if you go into them. Obviously, the Glazers don't give you too much of a soul anyway, but they've been there a while. It was leveraged buyout, but it was, it just seems to be this whole thing about, right, yes, give us men who can spend more money, more trying to keep us up. Whereas you look at us, and I'm, I really feel really quite a smoking Lincoln fan, because our board are fans who, yeah, they can invest money, but not stupid stuff. And also, when they get the money, there's no dubious sources it comes from.
Gary Sweet looks pretty dubious. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. but we're the exception to the rule, Nick. And we all know that, you know? Like, there's not many... I don't think there's another team in the Premier League that's owned by fans.
No.
And I don't, like, go down the leagues. I'm sure there are some, but like, being owned by actual fans of the team is the exception to the rule. As I said, you know, you need some sort of investment in there, and it became a plaything for American companies there for a while, because the sport's so big, and the Premier League is one of the biggest leagues in the world. It became a plaything of sorts for Americans. And honestly, like, the people who are taking over the clubs, they don't care. Like, what they care about is their dividends at the end of the year. That's ultimately what they care about. How much money is going into their pockets at the end of the year? They don't care about the fans.
I know you're not to offend Americans because you live there and you get the pause if you don't.
Am I defending Americans right now?
Well, you know, I saw say, oh, can you just sneaking there? You can see it from there. So, simple question. So, you've got 2020 who have got put some money into it. Obviously, not billions and billions and billions, but so you know, is you know, quite a substantial amount over the years. But it was nothing compared to some of the Premier League clubs. So, you can stick with them, or you can get a US, Qatari, Saudi, God knows how it's going to work, consortium who are going to put 2 billion to the club. What do you want?
I want 2020. But here's the thing as well. Like, Luton's different. Like, if you ask a Luton fan that, if you ask one of us that, we want 2020 to stay.
Yeah.
But if you talk to a fan of a team who's being poorly ran, talk to a fan of Reading, they're going to take the second option, right?
I think they just like anybody who's actually sort of, you know, not corrupt.
Exactly.
Decent. Exactly. I think they prefer, I mean, it's... Let's go further back on this. You've got some, obviously, Southend down in the conference. And they very, very, very nearly went out of business because they had a chairman who absolutely refused to give up, even though he didn't have any money to put in, but he refused to sell up until he got what he thought would be money put in. And then I think he got persuaded in the end to go out. But, I mean, that is now basically run by a fans consortium to a certain extent. So, obviously, you're not going to have the millionaires coming out. But I think if they do that properly, that's the way forward for it, surely.
Yeah, I think like
football clubs are not businesses. They're sort of, you know, they're not businesses. They're not run for profit. They're there for the fans. The shareholders are the fans.
But here's the thing. Like 20 years ago, I would have said, yes, I totally agree with you. It's not that way anymore. 30 years ago, even. It's just Premier League clubs are businesses. They are businesses to these people that own them. That's what they are. Unfortunately, it's not. Like, the fans still have the attachment. The fans, like, it's not... For the fans, it's not just, like, going and buying something at a business, buying a ticket to go see a game. You know, it's not the same thing for a fan. But it is for the owners. Like, whether you spend your money on the football match or whether you spend their money at one of their establishments, they don't care. The money's still coming into them, you know? Football is not just a business to the fans, but to the owners, it is very, very much a business, unfortunately.
And that's where something needs to be sort of done, some commissions. I think there's talks at the moment because it's basically a football club is a community thing. It's not just a normal business. And it's if they're getting taken over. I mean, you've got sort of, you know, you've got that lot down the road who sat their manager yet again, probably since the last podcast, probably sat a couple since then.
But, like, again, we go back to community, right, Nick? Like, I don't know what it was like.
Oh, hang on. I'm giving you a golden opportunity to slag off a scum here, and you're trying to change
the subject. I will. Don't worry. I'm getting to that. But what I'm saying is, like, I know you said you kind of got into... Oh, by the way, for anyone that didn't know, Nick was on Hatter or Lower, which is a part of We Are Luton Town podcast network with Ollie Kay, and actually known really, really well. Got 6 out of 10, I think it was. Doubted himself on one. Doubted himself on one. It could have been 7. Doubted himself on one and talked himself.
No, I did doubt myself. I just went completely the opposite because I thought, let's try that. Yeah. So.
But very impressed. I actually thought he had Wikipedia open while he was doing it because it just seemed a little bit too dubious. But what I will say, Nick, going back to the community thing, when I was growing up, and probably when you were growing up, like the local teams that you had around the area were made up of local players. Like you, at least growing up where I did, the rule was you had to live within a certain radius of that team to be able to play for that team. So it was very, very much a community team. It was made up of people from within that area. Football has changed so much now in the last 20, 30 years that it's not community anymore. It's all about how much money the owners can get out of and how they can manipulate the system to get even more and how they can manipulate the system to do this and to do that. And for instance, our great friends, Watford, you know, the owners there are manipulating the system because they've got two teams and they're trying, okay, well, we can do this and then we can sell that player to that team. This team makes a profit and we get the player that we want to the other team. It's become a business. But as Watford are showing is that businesses can be run really, really, really badly and can actually affect the business in the long run because, I mean, they can talk shit all they want. all about, oh, blah, 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 you know, we were in the Premier League this many times. You're not in the Premier League this season. You're doing fucking shit in the Championship. You've just sacked another manager.
Even better, their parachute payments run out at the end of the year.
Even better. Did not know that, but even better. But this is what it's come down to. The game is not community anymore. It's run by businessmen for profit. And it's still very much a community for the fans within there. And it's actually probably a larger community than it used to be, because it used to be just that local area. As I said, when I was growing up, it was just a local area. Now you have fans of teams all over the world, you know, and it's still a community, because all these fans still interact with each other and still talk to each other, and, you know, on social media and whatnot that wasn't around 30 years ago. But it's still very much a community in that sense. But for the people who unfortunately run the show, it's very much a business.
I think you need some legislation, though, so it's kind of, you know, you do have the chance of being sort of, you know, it does protect the community. For example, like, I know our fans used to have a 10% share, but also our fans now own sort of, you know, through the trust, they own the imaging rights. So people can't kind of change the kit to whatever color they want to, change the badge to whatever sponsorship they want to, rename the ground, et cetera, without consent. I think that's actually a good starting point for a lot of clubs. And I think, okay, it's total charters, because I said, right, football fans are not customers. We're actual fans. There's a difference. We're not consumers.
The thing is, and I'll push back on the trust thing. The one of the reasons why the trust got the imaging rights and all that stuff was because Gary Sweet was a part of the trust. And when he took over Luton, he gave the trust so much percentage of shares and imaging rights and everything else. Because, again, it comes back to, he's a fan of the club. Gary Sweet's a Luton Town fan, you know, and he wanted the club to live on and past him, you know, and past like whoever comes after him. He wanted to know that the club would continue no matter what. But Gary Sweet did that for the trust. He gave the trust that shareholder, that percentage. Who in their right mind, the Glazers or the Cronkies or the Bowleys in Chelsea or any of them club owners, who in their right mind are going to give a supporters trust any sort of sharehold in those clubs right now, knowing that the majority of the fans want them gone?
It's not shareholding, it's imaging rights. So.
But the imaging rights come with the shareholders, right?
No.
That was my understanding. It's all part of a package.
Yeah, the trust did not have the shares, but they do own the image rights. So, for example,
again, it comes back to who in their right mind is going to do that for fans, knowing that majority of the fans for those clubs that I just mentioned want them gone, apart from Arsenal right now, until they start sliding down the table again.
Right. Well, the image rights, it gives you an example. It's like the Cardiff firm chairman, whatever his name is, lazy guy. He was basically going about, he sort of talked about some, you know, renaming them, some, you know, change the kit so the red, because they'll be.
I remember this.
Yeah. And I said, that's the type of thing having the image rights stops. There was another one, I think it was a Chester City chairman, wanted to rename the club Hartlepool United to cash in on the globe-wide fame of a Sky TV show. That's just examples of something that should not be allowed.
It shouldn't. But again, as I said, they're playthings. They don't care. They don't care. The only thing, they'll always come out and say, oh, we care about growing the sport. They care about growing the sport because it grows their bank balance. It's the only thing they care about at the end of the day, is what can I do to help grow my bank balance? It's sad.
I do wonder how much actually grows their bank balance. I think someone said the only way to actually make a small fortune out of running a football club is to start with a big fortune.
A lot of these people have big fortunes, though, unfortunately.
Yes, which they sort of, you know, you might be even cost the money, because you think, you're right, the amount, it's I just don't think a football club as an investment opportunity is a particularly good one. It's an ego opportunity, not an investment one. Because you could spend, like Chelsea, for example,
only if you care about the club. But here's the thing, Chelsea know they spent a billion, but they know that realistically most of them players are gonna get sold on in 3 to 4 years for probably a profit, because they've spread the payments over so many years, you know. So at the end of the day, they sell
a lot of those players. If you look at the transfer fees, know?
Well, the way they're playing right now, you might have to let them go for fucking free.
You have to pay someone to take them, I think, someone.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, we've got sort of, I said, since we've digressed, but nobody's listening by this point anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
No. It's just us rambling on.
Yeah. But we've got, okay, so that deduction points us above, puts us a point above Forest, which it still could be tricky because I think Forest's next two games, they've got, I'm not sure, they've got Palace and Fulham. Our next two games are Tottenham and Arsenal away. And if we get anything from those two things, you'd be quite grateful, I think, to be fair to say, the polite way of putting it.
Yeah, if we get anything from Arsenal or Tottenham, I will be over the fucking moon, if I'm being totally honest.
And then you've got
here's the thing with the deductions, with the four-point deduction, Forest could get points. Let's say Forest pick up 2 points over the next two games, go back above us, you know, in the league. We don't get anything. It still keeps them within touching distance. You know, it's not like they're... it's not like they're what would they have been? They would have been if they drew, and they would have been 5 points. So that's it's not completely out of reach, but it's not within touching distance anymore. So even if they do pick up something, you just kind of hope that Fulham and who was it, Everton?
Palace.
You just hope that Fulham and Palace can play the way they've been playing in recent weeks. Palace against us, Fulham against Tottenham, and not let them pick up anything, and then keep the table the way it's looking right now.
I think the crucial thing is, so you know, home games especially, we've deserved a lot more than we've got. We've got four home games left. We need to make sure we're getting everything from them.
Yeah, we need 12 points from them four games, if we're being realistic. Which is difficult because it's what? It's Fulham, Everton, Bournemouth, and who's the last one?
Brentford.
I mean, they're four very winnable games, you know, but we got to make sure... Maybe 12's been a little bit unrealistic. 10? 9?
9 to 10 you'd be happy with, I think.
Yeah, 9 to 10 you'd be over the moon with. But yeah, we definitely need to pick up the points at home, and then just hope that away from home we can pick up a point here or there. I think we got Wolves away.
Got Wolves away and West Ham away. They're the two. I think you'd get something.
Get something
Spurs,
else.
Spurs, I think that's outside chance, depending on injuries.
Spurs are very Spursy.
Exactly. That's what I think is outside chance if you catch them on a Spursy day.
Let's hope so. It Spurs are just one of them teams where you kind of look at it and you kind of go, they could play the way they did against Fulham and we could get something out of it. Or they could play the way they have for a lot of this season and we just wipe the floor with us. I honestly think I would have preferred playing Spurs without the week off for the international break, because I think it's given Postecoglou 2 weeks now to that's not happening again. Let me see what I can do here.
I'm absolutely, for the first time ever, I'm delighted we've got an international break, because it means we might stand outside chance of getting some of our players back in. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a benefit to us, is the fact that we might actually get some fucking players back. But
not many.
Spurs, not many.
I think there's two come up before the end of the season, as it stands.
Yeah, if we go down, it'll be because of that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But we should have bought a striker in January.
Jesus Christ, that always say it must be strong shit.
I think that's it, Nick.
I think, yeah.
I'm done.
Okay. Right, okay. And we'll see you on the next podcast, or not, depending on stuff. Cheers, bye.